We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Jessica Lopez has spent the last 10 months in state prison for her participation in protests that turned violent in downtown Lancaster following the fatal police shooting of Ricardo Munoz in September of 2020 that spawned a large protest in front of Munoz's home. This was following the summer of protesting in Lancaster City and County as hundreds of residents took to the streets of their municipalities to demonstrate their want for equality. Munoz, who had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, charged a police officer with a knife as police responded to a domestic disturbance call from his sister. And today, after serving 10 months in state prison and after reconnecting with her mother and four children, we have with us Ms. Jessica Lopez on The Spark today. Hello, Jessica. How you doing?
One day at a time, Marquise. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So let's start it right there. You know, you said that you're taking it one day at a time. How has life been so far now that you're no longer incarcerated?
A bit different. Like, you get in your mind that you're going to come home and your life is just going to restart where it stopped. But it's not like that. You have to kind of transition back into society. And social anxiety is very real. Mm-hmm. Like, being around people, being in large groups, it takes time to transition and really get back to a functioning standpoint. I just secured employment, so getting back to work is something that I've been dying to do. And just really one day at a time. And when that becomes too much, one moment.
Mm. So what were some of the first things that you did? Of course, you know, you saw your kids and everything like that. But what were some of the first things to kind of get you back into, you know, some kind of normalcy for yourself?
Set up my room, unpack some of my stuff, spend time with my family, of course. And then just got back on the grind, trying to, like I said, find a job, reestablish situations with my students so I can go back to school, and just get in touch with people that were beside me the entire time. I had great support, immense support, so a lot of people to speak to. I still haven't even spoken to everybody, but, you know, just really trying to find a balance and surround myself with people that are good for my mental being.
Yeah.
And understand that it's really just one step at a time for me.
Now, for the transition, what were some of the hardest things to transition out of now that you're out?
I spent a lot of time by myself. I was housed on LB in Muncie, which is an open unit. So picture a TB clinic or like a overflowing refugee center.
Mm.
And it's like literally bunk beds 2-3 feet apart from each other and 70 women in a double wide trailer. And you're constantly surrounded by people. There's never a moment where you're by yourself. You go to use the bathroom and there's 3 other stalls in the bathroom. You go to take a shower, there's 3 other showers. So it's like, you're never alone.
Mm.
So now that I'm at home, I just like being with me for a little bit.
You mentioned you went to open mic night, and you also mentioned that our social anxieties are very real. So how did that intermingle?
Yeah, I go to A Concrete Rose. Shout out to A Concrete Rose. And we do poetry nights every Wednesday. And going down there, like, it's soothing for my soul. Don't get it wrong, because I write. I love to read my poems. But at the same time, like, having everybody look at you and you're exposing your soul. And it's like, it takes a lot. Like, you get the anxiety, the stress, the nervousness. Speaking in public is an automatic anxiety, but it's like, you just got to take it slow. Speak to one person at a time. Mm-hmm. Tunnel vision. Focus on one person at a time. Find a spot in the room, stare at it, like, and just try to blend, because I have to blend, like, in order to get back to the person I was and involved in the things I am, I have to be able to conquer my social anxiety.
yeah, and then also with you being disconnected and then essentially being reconnected after 10 months, how was that process? Because, like we all know, life still goes on. So, you know, there was obviously some things that you missed, you know, some things that you may not even know. So how was that catching up process?
I can say that people kept me pretty well in the loop.
Oh, wow. Like, okay.
To the point that I had pictures of the Christmas tree downtown. People kept me very, very, very in the loop of what was transpiring. Policy-wise, what was going on mm-hmm. with the rebuild of the city, how my kids were growing. Like, I was pretty well kept in the loop. And, you know, I'm a news buff. So yeah. I was watching the news constantly. And I can, like, the thing that kind of hurt the most was there was a lot of death.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that in 10 months so many people would be gone. But there's a lot of people that I came home that are no longer here. Mm. Like, and that hurts my soul. There's moments that I'll never be able to speak to people again. And it's like, that's the real killer.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's now take it to the summer of 2020. Now, you decided to get involved with the protests that were going on downtown. Let's specifically talk about the very first one with George Floyd that was held during the day, and then folks took to the street and started walking around Lancaster City, and the police had to shut down the roads and everything like that. So, for yourself, as a mom of four, why did you decide to get involved during that time?
Well, at that point, I had pending civil litigation against the city of Lancaster, the federal lawsuit, and I wasn't going to go. Like, I got a message about it the day before, and I was debative on whether I should go down there, if that was legally sound. But like you said, I have four Black children growing up in Lancaster City. I have a son that has special needs. Mm-hmm. Like, he reminds me so much. When I hear the Elijah McClain story, like, I think of Prince. When I see these men and women being murdered, I flash 20 years, and it's like, what if that were one of my children?
Mm.
And I wanted my children to be able to experience this historic event. Why? Because Lancaster has never seen anything in that rhyme or fashion. They've done protests, but they were never protests for us. They mm-hmm. were never protests that were directly geared towards the Black and brown community and saving the Black and brown community. So I felt like my children needed to take part in that, needed to experience, needed to know that they have a voice.
Yeah. Now, you said your special needs child, and I do want to concentrate on that briefly. Now, this special needs child, this happened due to lead, correct?
Yes. Prince was exposed to lead from a house that we had rented in Millersville. Mm-hmm. We were unaware of the conditions until he had a his lead levels checked during a Medi-Bal. He tested out at 6.5, which is a little high on the Richter scale, not crazy high, but it's high enough, and lead is a degenerative disease, so it builds up in your bones and eats away at you. But he has a cluttering disorder, and he struggles with a few learning disabilities, and don't get it wrong, he's highly intelligent, smart kid, sweet, caring, like, a little socially awkward, that's my baby, though. But, and that's why, in a sense, he reminds me of Elijah McClain. Elijah McClain was fully functioning. He was highly intelligent. He was loving. He was caring. But he just processed things a little differently.
Yeah.
And Prince processes things a little differently. He requires an IEP in school and a little one-on-one learning time. And it's like, I can't, like, I can differentiate the two. But at the same time, like, when you see a picture of Elijah McClain and you see a picture of Prince, they even kind of resemble each other. It's kind of heartbreaking. So it's like, what would I do if I was that child's mother? And how would I feel? Like, that would kill me. Just the thought of it would kill me.
Right, right. And then you said that you feel as though that the landlord took advantage of you all because of the situation that you guys were in. Is that correct?
I will say most certainly. I can't speak too much on it because there was a civil process. I fought back. Like, we aren't protected with enough rights as renters in Lancaster and Lancaster County. Landlords are more protected than we are, so I didn't really have much leeway when it came to certain things. And as much as they speak on, you know, this fight against lead, like, Lancaster County is not following suit, that the city's following suit. And really, I don't feel like there is enough protection against that. There's not enough action after the fact. Like, yes, you can monitor them. Yes, you know, teach you how to counteract. But who's going to set this child up to be able to care for himself, to be able to go on and be successful later on in life after he was exposed to such a thing? This landlord's wealthy. He's from a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. He has resources, endless resources, but my child has me.
Yeah, right, right. And before we go to our first break here, as a mom, you know, I'm hearing that these lead levels are so high. Where does your mind go once hearing that?
Oh, you know, I go 0 to 100. So, it was a process. It really was. We went to Lowe's, me and my sister. My sister stars, like, heaven sent. We went to Lowe's. We bought a bunch of lead tests. We took a bunch of pictures. We tested the entire property. We proved our case at the end of the day. But even still, how do you, with my limited resources, relocating four children and myself and an entire giant house, like, trying to, it was a process, and it was another struggle on top of another struggle, which is, you know, the defining factor of systemic oppression and everything else. And being exposed to these situations is what ultimately put me to go to these protests. You know what you experience.
Right.
And the oppression that we face, the silent oppression that we face in Lancaster with limited resources and limited options to fight back, somebody has to say something. Mm-hmm. We can't all keep struggling in silence.
Jessica, we briefly touched on the very first protest down there in Lancaster City. So can you describe the atmosphere and emotions during that protest downtown?
It was empowering. And emotions were high throughout the crowd. There was thousands, and people were in pain. You could see it. You could see the pain from their personal struggles. You could see the pain from national struggles. You could see the pain from them envisioning what the future struggles would be like. It was real impactful.
And how has that experience changed your relationships, whether it's with friends, whether it's with families? How has your involvement in this affected your relationships?
People are starting to realize, like, that they have resources, that there are ways and avenues to utilize their own voices. The community has bigged up so much since the summer of 2020. Everybody's trying to do something. Everybody's getting involved. Everybody's making sure that they're looking out for each other and that we are developing our own spaces. And, you know, people see that it's not just me rambling about things, that there are points to be made and conversations to be had.
Right. And one conversation that I want to have with you is your time in state prison. Has it affected your perspective on activism and social justice?
It drives me to want to fight harder and really, really find a way to generate change. I have a term for the women in Muncie. I call them the forgotten women. Incarcerated women suffer so greatly because where men are by the thousands, the dozens of thousands, and stand together, women battle separately. And women, some women do, some women don't, but they don't have the backing that men have. Men have these strong wives standing behind them. Women are ultimately forgotten. I met a woman named Marie Scott, and she like, her story breaks my heart. And not to say that I didn't already, in my struggle, feel semi-blessed because I was, like I said, very, very loved and supported while I was up there. But I couldn't be too down about my situation, hearing her situation and knowing how strong she was of a person and her will to be an organizer, writer, advocate. She does so much, and she's behind bars for the last 51 years. She's been incarcerated since she was 19. And she's fighting to end death by incarceration. She's fighting against mass incarceration. She's fighting for children with incarcerated parents. She's fighting for parents' rights in there. If you have an issue, something transpires in there, she's going to sit down with her typewriter and help you write and formulate your, well, not help you formulate your grievance because that's against DOC policy, but she's going to, you know, make sure you follow through. And she's committed to making her time in there purposeful. And she's committed to fighting back what she's going through. And that's inspiring.
Yeah. What was it about Mary Scott's story that made you gravitate towards her?
She was a young Black woman that was incarcerated at 19 in the 70s in Philadelphia. She did not murder anybody. Felonious murder, all you have to do is be on the scene and you could do life in jail and you could die in prison, where there's so many different levels. Like, she didn't take a life, but she has to give her entire life before she even had a life.
Yeah.
Before she even knew who she was. We're in the day and age where we're understanding that our brains aren't fully developed until a certain age. We're in a day and age where we're understanding that we don't even find ourselves until 30.
Yeah.
And she spent 30 in prison. She spent 20 in prison. She spent 21 before she was even legally able to drink. She was incarcerated. And it's like, where does the rehabilitation come into play? Where do we believe in transformative justice? Where do we start to understand that the person you were at 19 isn't the person you are at 71.
Yeah, and I have a question about that. Were there moments of reflection or personal growth during your time in prison that you would like to share?
There were. There were a lot of moments of reflection. and reprocessing and understanding that, one, I have to watch my language a little bit. Shout out to LMP. You made me realize I do cuss just a little bit much. I'm not going to give them credit for incarcerating me. But at the same time, it gave me a moment to learn how to be okay with being with just me.
Yeah.
And it reminded me that I can survive anywhere and nothing they can do can break me.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that they haven't already done to me that I haven't survived.
Yeah.
And that's for anybody. Everything we go through on a daily basis, we survive. Mm. As long as we wake up the next day, you got another day to fight. And it's like, I want to make this all purposeful. I don't want to be like, oh, I spent that 10 months in prison and what came from it. Mm-hmm. No. I spent that 10 months in prison. I re-educated. I kept my face in books. I linked up with Let's Get Free magazine and Daughters magazine.
Mm.
I made connections. I listened to stories. I continued to develop myself. I didn't allow them to shut me down. I didn't allow them to hinder my growth, regardless of what. The social anxiety part, I'll get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, is like, I was never, you know, socially awkward in that sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm at the front of the crowd, but it's like, I understand that you don't always have to be in the front now.
Yeah.
I can still be heard from the background.
Mm. Well, Jess, I will tell you this. My grandmother always said, if you're still here, you survived 100% of your worst days. And Jess, you are still here and have survived 100% of your worst days. I'm glad that you had the chance to come up on here on the Spark and let us in, you know, let us know what's going on. I appreciate you coming up here. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you for having me.